Welcome to Ben Behaving Dadly with me, Ben Hanlon. This is the podcast where I sit down each week with a celebrity guest and get their best parenting tips and advice, from the small little parenting hacks right up to the big stuff. Today's guest is Jack Ryder, actor, director, author. A lot of you will remember him in EastEnders when he was Jamie Mitchell from 1998 to 2002 until, unfortunately, he was killed off. And then he has gone on to star in many, many other things. Lots and lots of TV appearances, radio appearances in The Archers, West End appearances in things like Calendar Girls. He's also been in Holby City recently as well. And also, as well as an author, he's released the book Jack's Secret Summer. And there is a follow-up book that is coming out very, very soon called Jack's Secret World. Many, many things. But more importantly than any of that, he has a fiance called Ella and a 10-month-old called Marnie. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, mate. That was a lovely introduction.
Thank you very much. 10 months old.
Yeah.
So how's your week going? Did you sleep last night? What happened last night?
The first time in a while, we had a bit of a rough night last night.
Yeah. Really? Go on, talk us through it quickly.
Yeah. No, she's just had a little cold, and we've all had colds, really, little colds. And hers is a bit lingering, and she was sort of coughing, and it's just waking her up. So she was up quite a bit last night. So we were a little bleary-eyed this morning. But up to then, the last sort of 6 weeks, she's been a dream. She's just been sleeping through,
you know? lovely. Well, I know you've got some tips, we're going to come on to them, but can we just talk about the Jamie Mitchell the death? Okay, so this was one of the most famous, because EastEnders, I mean, I don't know how they keep selling those properties on Albert Square, because it's the most dangerous place to live. People are getting killed off left, right and center. So talk us through your famous death, probably one of the most famous deaths in EastEnders.
It was a Christmas Day thing. It was not a sort of leaving in a black cab scenario. He was hit by a car, which Martin Fowler was driving.
That's right, yeah.
Kind of nemesis at the time. And he died on Christmas Day. It was a Christmas Day thing. So I obviously knew the storyline and what was happening. Yeah. So yeah, we didn't have the show on that day, but a lot of people did. And
Do you know what this is, Bon? It's only in the UK where we'll go, do you know what we'll do on Christmas Day? We'll kill somebody and it'll be the most watched show on Christmas Day. It's bonkers. So my question then, when you work on something like EastEnders, how do they tell you you're going to die? How did you find out? Do they just give you a script and then go, uh-oh, he's reading it?
In truth, it was a weird one because I decided to leave.
Right.
I was getting a lot of attention outside of the show, and it was quite overwhelming. And it kind of got to a stage where I kind of was a bit lost in the woods with everything. And the character had been there for nearly 5 years, and it was kind of like he's kind of done everything he's needed to do. And it was like, am I going to sort of now just sort of get a job in the CAF or something like that? And it was like a kind of split road for me at that moment. Like, I can either stay in this thing and kind of just coast along because he's kind of had a really good run, or I can just go and see the world, you know. And explore a bit more. So so I decided to leave, and so we talked about it, and they sort of said to me that the only way he could go is if he died, basically. Like he wouldn't leave, you know, he wouldn't, you know. So I was kind of caught, you know, in that situation, and I just sort of, my decision was made. It was like, whether I leave for a year and come back or whether I leave for good, I have to move my life a bit. Because it's quite tough. And so that was the decision was made then, really. Yeah.
And then I bet you were like, well, if I'm going to do it, let's do it on Christmas Day. Let's go big. Done.
Well, yeah, that was the genius of the EastEnders team, I guess. But it was a big finish, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm over the years, you know, people would say, oh, are you sad you died? So you could never go back, sort of thing. And in a way, it was kind of a good thing that there was not the option of returning, because there was never that kind of slight open window to go back.
Never got half a foot there. You're like, well, I'm off now.
I've got to make something happen now. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no return.
Yeah. And let's talk about lockdown. So you've had a busy year. You've had a baby. You've written a book and you've started a business. So why not, eh?
it's been a hell of a year. You know, and it's a weird one because I kind of I guess, as you know, with having kids and kind of being busy yourself, you kind of forget what's going on half the time because you're just kind of in the storm of it all. And then it's when people say, oh, you've done this, you've done that, and you kind of go, oh God, yeah, during COVID, I actually have done quite a lot. You know?
So let's talk about the business then. You've launched a business.
Yeah, I mean, call it business. It's basically, I have a real passion for the job I do, and I've been directing for the last 10 years. And in amongst that, been making short films and writing things and working in drama schools and just doing lots of odd bits and pieces. And I love working with actors. So I decided to set up an online acting class, which is a one-on-one experience for the client. And I found that in drama schools, I really loved sort of dipping into that and doing workshops and things. But I loved when I was face-to-face with someone, when I was actually really in tune with someone's sort of ability and then working on their craft and if they needed any guidance, and that one-on-one nature of it was really something I thought was brilliant. So I've set up this thing, and it's going all right. It's called the Jack Ryder Sessions, and I've got people I'm working with who are, some are working in the industry, some have never acted before, and it's going really well. It's very enjoyable.
How do you, because the thing is, I would imagine most people who are, you know, of a certain standard know if they're good or if they're bad or where they need improvement, but I would imagine occasionally, just every occasionally, someone comes along and they think they're amazing and they're really not. How'd you tell them? How'd you go, you're not as good as you think that was?
It's not like X Factor where I've got a over here and I say, you know, you're no good, get off the stage sort of thing. It's a very collaborative process, and everyone, you know, if you have a passion for something, you know, you've got to kind of go all in. And you know, whether you're going to make it in television or make it in the theatre is another thing, and it's kind of up to the gods, really, whether you're a professional or not. Do you know what I mean? When I started, I'd never done any theatre. I wasn't represented by an agent. I hadn't done a thing yet. I was spotted, and my career just took that path, and it was wonderful, you know. So anything can happen.
And let's talk about the book then. So Jack's Secret World, the sequel to Jack's Secret Summer. Let's start from the beginning. What was Jack's Secret Summer? Because people might want to catch up on that before the new one comes out in July. So yeah, talk us through it.
Yeah, so basically the whole premise of the book started when I'd made a couple of short films, and I was sort of got some confidence in that and some good feedback of some quite prolific writers in the industry at the time. So I kind of took a shot at writing a screenplay, and I got 20 pages in and I stood back from the script and thought, this isn't a film, this isn't a screenplay, this is a book, it's a children's book, you know. And once I kind of made that decision, there were endless opportunities for the story to just be as fantastical as I wanted it to be. So I sort of was directing, I think I was directing Calendar Girls and The Full Monty at the time, and in my evenings I would literally sit down for 3 hours without leaving the room, basically, and write this thing, and really just went all in. And Hachette, publishers, thank God, fell in love with the story and took it on, and we developed it together over another year. And that was the kind of beginning. But it was kind of, the idea, I guess, came from my childhood and growing up. I grew up in Southeast London, a great group of mates who are still my mates, best mates today, and we had a lot of fun, and there was a lot of adventure involved and playfulness and mischief and all sorts, and it was all based around that sort of time. So I put it into this story, and then the story evolved and it just sort of did its thing, you know.
So do you remember what sparked Jack for you? Were you kind of like, oh, there was this idea I had and it came from there, and then, or did you just think, I had fun as a kid, let's just go in and discover that?
Like, the ideas have always been there, because a lot of it is not biographical, but a lot of it is kind of the essence and the environment and the kids and the way it was. It's been planted in my brain. It's very happy memories since I was a boy, and they've always been swimming around the whole time, so it's constant.
Well, let's talk about this. What were you like as a kid?
A nightmare, apparently.
Were you?
Yeah.
Why?
When I was really little, I was very loud, very funny, did lots of dancing and impressions.
Yeah.
Was kind of like, if I had a can of Tizer, I was off, you know.
Right.
I was mental, apparently, when I was quite young. But yeah, I was, I guess, like any other normal kid. You know, I had good mates and we played football a lot and watched a lot of cartoons and watched a lot of movies. Movies was a big thing growing up. But
Brothers,
yeah,
sisters.
I was a lot more confident as a kid as I am now, hugely more confident. I would
Well, as
stand on walls and talk to people and kind of entertain. Whereas now, I think I'm very much, much more insular now.
so you had that kind of look at me, Gene.
Yeah,
And
I was
you.
very young. But it was interesting because when EastEnders started and the whole fame thing and kind of being the pin-up sort of thing, I was totally went into my shell, totally did this. I didn't
Really?
move towards that in like I was, you know. I kind of actually went, oh no, this feels. So I kind of went, did this, you know.
And we growing up, your house, your brothers, sisters.
Yeah, well, my parents separated before I was a year old. So I was with my brother, who's 3 years older, and then my dad, with his next relationship, had my half sister Vi, but she's my, you know, she's class sister. She's 2.5 years younger than me. So yeah, it's me, my brother, and my sister.
And
Yeah.
your dad was a musician, right? In a
Yeah.
quite
Yeah.
well-known band.
He was in a band. He was in Wang Chung. Yeah. They were quite successful in the States and very successful in the States. And yeah, had some hits in the 80s and stuff like that. So I used to watch my dad on Top of the Pops when I was a kid.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, shall we dive into your tips? This is why we are here. I know you've come prepared. What is your first parenting tip, Jack?
A first parenting tip is, I guess, one that we've kind of learned is that when your child, when your baby is kind of teetering on, you know, a little bit sick, a little bit sniffly or whatever, we've had moments where it's been that kind of Friday evening situation where we've kind of left it a couple of days and then she's not got any better. And then you decide to maybe call the doctor or something like this. And it's kind of going into the weekend and then the doctors aren't. So I guess, in terms of all that, because the children do get sniffly and do get a little bit unwell, is like always sort of, I guess, that kind of forward thinking of just thinking ahead when things are open, when things are closed, and stuff like that, and getting ahead of the curve slightly when it comes to your kid's health, I guess.
Have you had any ones where you've had to kind of, you take them in and take them to hospital, that kind of
We've been
stuff?
very lucky, actually. No, we've done a lot of, we've done stuff on the phone and stuff like that, but we've never actually had a situation yet where we've had to rush down to A&E or anything like that.
Yeah, it's bonkers how scary that moment is. So we had it when Delilah was about, I think, 10 months old, maybe, maybe not even. And she had suspected sepsis. So, and the reason I tell this is just because if anyone's listening, they've not heard me say this before. It was just this moment where her breathe, like, your kid, right? You know when they're either a bit sniffly or, oh, I need to make a phone call here, like you're saying, don't leave it, especially if it's getting to the quiet times. And her breathing was just, her breathing just got really not great and her skin got quite mottled. So when you touch her skin, it would leave a mark, that kind of thing. And she had a temperature, called the ambulance, it rushed straight over to our house and they took one look at her and went, right, in the ambulance, let's go, we're going to hospital, like that. I was at a gig, I was about to walk on stage at a corporate, and I was literally, so I'd done my sound check, 500 people, I was hosting the evening, and Bryony calls me and goes, I've called the ambulance. So I turned to the booker of the evening and I went, I gotta go. And I just took the mic off and just walked out the door. And I don't know how they finished, how they sorted the gig. And we went straight to hospital and they sorted him out and they were hooking her up. And they said, if we hadn't have called when we did, if we didn't make that call, then it could have got really serious really fast. So I think what
It's
you're
really
saying.
tricky because you can go online and stuff, and online can really contradict itself with things. Do you know what I mean? And it can kind of scare you slightly. So, in terms of going with your instincts and stuff like that, obviously your partner did, and it's so important to trust your instincts, trust what you know.
Sorry to make an even more serious point, but I just thought I'd mention it just because you just never know, like especially when it comes to the breathing as well. You go, some people are so polite they don't want to kick up a fuss and just make the phone calls. So what's been your biggest challenge so far? So you got a 10-month-old. Obviously they go through so many different stages.
The first thing was the sleep deprivation.
Okay.
That was the first thing that really struck me massively. Just wasn't expecting it. I'd heard about it. This is the thing. We got together with a couple of friends quite early. I think Marnie must have been a few months old, and they have a kid who's like about seven, and they had a girl who was about maybe one, coming up to one. And they're like, "How's it going?" And Ella was saying, "Oh, it's this and it's that." And they sort of looked at me and went, "Yes, you good?" And I was just sort of in my own head for a moment, you know, because I was really feeling it, you know. And I said, "You know what it is?" I said, "It's 70% amazing and wonderful and life-changing, the most beautiful thing, is 25% sort of that back-breaking sort of chaos that it is. And I said, and it's 5%, why didn't anyone tell me? Why didn't anyone really tell me? And it was this thing where I'd heard over the years from people, oh, you know, and people do that really polite thing of, oh, yeah, oh, we'll catch up when you sleep, and it's all smiley. Yeah. No one actually looks you in the eye and says, this is what it is, you know. And I was really sort of angry about that at the time. I was like, yeah, I really couldn't get my head around why no one had actually really laid it down.
Do you know what it is? I liken it to, you know, in those films like The Faculty or other films where there's the body snatchers are coming, you know, like the invasion of the body snatchers. So a body snatcher or an alien invades the town, and one by one, more of the town get turned into these like zombie things. Yeah. It's a bit like that. It's like, we know we're part of the club, yeah, and you're going to be part of the club. Yeah. And now you're part, you're like, uh-oh, I'm on the other side now.
It's those looks you have with dads who are walking with the pram and you're walking with the pram. And it's just that little nod of sort of respect. Do you know what I mean?
But do you know what though, right? In all positiveness, what an amazing time to have a baby in a way, because you've had your baby, because you're in lockdown, you're at home. Whereas I'd imagine your career, you're probably having big certain stints where you're so intense with work and you're away. But the fact that you could wake up every day in your own house, which even at the time has its own obstacles, but that's a time that is quite special. Not many people have been able to have that.
It's something that I feel enormously grateful about, because my brother has a son. He has a daughter as well now, but when he had his boy, who's now about six, he wasn't working at the time, and he really was hands-on dad, and kind of looks back on that time of going, I was there for every single beat, every moment. And when COVID was obviously still is going on, but when it was really at its height, I really remembered him talking about that and thinking, I'm so lucky that this, I have the opportunity to just kind of be here.
Right. What are the tips have you got for us, Jack?
I'll tell you what's a great thing.
Go on.
Is the, I guess I call it the sort of the nostril snorter.
What's this?
It's when they're kind of snotty and the less than, they can't blow their nose. They can't, you know. And it's this thing that you just put on the end of their nostril and you just suck up into a tube all of the sort of mucus and phlegm and unblock the nose. So when
you siphon oil almost.
No, when she's like waking up 2-3 in the morning, it's like so blocked, and you can just do this thing. And she's very, at first it used to sort of scare her a little bit, and now she's just kind of like, give me the thing. And you know, you put it in the thing and she just can breathe through. That's been a real godsend, because it's just made sure she hasn't been so stuffy. So it's just this little contraption.
I've never heard of that.
Haven't you?
No, never. That's never come up.
I spoke to my mum about it, and she was sort of saying, well, I never had that when you were a kid. You know, you just had to hopefully one day you'll blow your nose, you know, and just hold the tissue.
Yeah.
But this thing, it just gets all of that stuff out so that they can breathe through their airways a bit more.
It's amazing. It's amazing, these little things that just, like, because, it just changes your life.
Another little tip, I think, is like, and I know everyone sort of knows this really, but just, I mean, I try and just make Marnie laugh as much as I can.
Okay,
Try and just keep the fun in everything, keep the games in everything. And it's not always possible, but I think it was Roald Dahl wrote a quote at the end of Danny, the Champion of the World, I think it was, where he wrote, you know, every kid wants a kind of sparky parent. Every parent should be sparky. That's what a kid wants. And I remember reading that book, and obviously with writing the children's books, I've got back into a lot of children's literature, and having Marnie, that quote popped up. And I tried to do that, whether it's just even just feeding her, just making things into stories, making things into games. And she's really developed an eye for humour, even at this early age. We can kind of look at each other even now, and she can see that it's a game. She can see that it's playful, and she just, happening next, you know. So I think as much as one can is to try and turn things into a game as much as possible.
And do you think part of that, I know exactly what you're saying, do you think part of that is because there's a performer inside you and you've got an audience a little bit, and you're going, oh, I can have a bit of a connection here, we can have a bit of fun here?
Maybe, yeah, probably a part of that.
So how good are you at being present? So obviously you're talking about being sparky and being there, but how good are you at taking the phone and putting it in another room? Or, because this is where I'm guilty, you know, me and Bryony, it's a work in progress. We have to literally, you know, go, right, we are going to put our phones in a different room and be 100% present, whether it's colouring or feeding or whatever. How are you at that, Jack?
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
I think at the moment it's been quite different in terms of the nature of COVID and obviously setting up the Jack Ryder sessions. You know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, emailing and doing lots of things like that. But I mean, even now, certainly, I think after 3 o'clock till Marnie's bedtime, we make sure that we're completely a family and there's no mobile phones. And I mean, even before me and Ella had Marnie, we had a thing where we would charge our phones in the kitchen at night and stuff. So when we got into our room, we never even had our phones in the bedroom at night. There was no buzzing at 10 o'clock at night or anything like that. It was always away. Mm.
So there's this big thing. I try and do it, and I'll be honest, I probably fail more times than I do. But there's this thing that I think the fear chemical in our body is cortisol, I think is what the fear chemical is. And when you wake up in the morning, that's particularly high. And yes. I would imagine it's because our animal brains wake up and go, are we safe? Are we going to get attacked? Is there anything come to get me in the night, right? So the first hour of your day, you've naturally got higher cortisol levels. When you look at your phone and you start engaging and seeing things, notifications and pop-ups and messages, and you're being pulled into your work mode really quickly, and then as a result your cortisol level, your anxiety is higher for the rest of the day. So what they say is, if you can, try and not be on your phone for the first half hour to an hour of the day. Literally wake up, walk straight past it in the morning, get ready. I'm working on it. I'm trying to make myself do that. But occasionally I'm like, no, I'll just have a look at this. And then I'm off then.
But you're human and that's life. And that's life now as well. It's all about phones. You know, you go past, I went past a hairdresser's the other day and there's just, you know, the place was empty, but there was three guys who obviously worked there, all in their phones. There's no interaction at all. There's no conversation. There's no banter. And it's the world we live in to a point. But I totally agree with what you're saying. And it says it's the first song of the day as well. I've got Spotify and I've got like a playlist for Marnie, which is little songs that she's reacted to over the months. And Circle of Life, like Lion King, you know, that's, you know, I turn it, like it's one of the first things I just turn on, you know, and then the phone's just playing its shuffle thing. And she just looks at me like this. And it's that song of like, you know, Sunrise, Africa. Yeah. Just like, if you're one of these people who turns on, you know, the news, the BBC News, within the first 5 minutes you wake up, it's not going to be a great day. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. All right. What has been your funniest or most embarrassing parenting moment?
One of the funniest moments was when me and Ella were feeding Marnie at the table in her high chair. And she started, a couple of weeks before, she started doing this thing where she was like, when she was liking something, she would kind of go like this and scream up her face and kind of like this. And I was just thinking of Jack Black in School of Rock.
By the way, you can't see this. What he's doing is he's nodding his head like a rocker.
Like a snorting, kind of scrunching up my face, like a kind of AC/DC fan, like rock and roll, you know, like, you know, let's rock on type vibe. And I was like, oh, no, she's a rock and roll girl. You know, she's loving all this. But what developed from that was her snorting.
Right.
So she started kind of doing that same action and then going like this.
Yeah.
We started doing it back to her. And then it became this, it was the first form of communication. So I would look at her and go, Marnie. And she'd go like this. Bizarre thing, and we discovered it at the dinner table, and we were just both laughing so hysterically. It was like that kind of, I guess, that first word moment, you know, a lot of, which we haven't yet, even though she's murmuring lots of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very hilarious moment where there were tears of laughter and kind of Ella and the connection with the three of us together. It was like, wow, this is A, funny, but B, you know, amazing. That was lovely.
And also, I think as well, obviously it's a funny moment, but I do think, right, I think we can say this, right? For the first 6 months, but for the dads especially, because we're not doing much, it's a little bit boring because they don't give you as much, right? But then when they start to give you stuff, and like you say, you can now snort and she snorts back. Yeah. Now it's like, okay, now we're cooking on. There's something going on here. This is great.
That process is just growing and growing. A lot of my friends who have children, people, you know, acquaintances and things said, yeah, you know, the first 3-6 months tough, and then it just gets from there. It just gets better and better and better, and they've all been right. You know, it, the first 3 months really did strike me quite hard, right? But no, it's just blossoming ever since.
Well, that leads me. You say, yeah, this leads me into a quite timely question then. So, when you've had a bad night's sleep, the day's not going right, let's be honest, we're a bit grouchy. We're a bit nibbly. What do you do to try and sort your head out? Is there an activity or something you have to do where you take yourself off and it kind of helps reset you and you go, okay, now I can carry on?
It's what you said before, really, in terms of being present. You know, that was something that really, especially going to sleep at night and stuff, being present in terms of really just being in tune with your body and breathing, a bit like meditation, I guess, but just really concentrating on that sort of stuff, that can really just really simmer you out. I mean, there's great apps like Headspace and stuff like that, which are really helpful, but just the pure simplicity of just breathing and just focusing on the breath itself and the sort of fall and the rise of it, that sometimes can really just, even if it's just for 30 seconds, just kind of settle everything down slightly. Yeah. There's been a few moments like that. I mean, I walk Marnie every day in the pram. We must do maybe 4 miles every day together.
Roughly.
Wow. And she has her nap in the afternoon. And she just prefers that, you know, she prefers being in the pram and seeing things and then sort of falling asleep than kind of putting her in her crib. So, and I find that, and I sort of make the time to do that and sort of, you know, position the acting, you know, lessons in the morning or the writing in the afternoon, whatever it might be. So I make that little time. But that's also very good, is getting out and just walking and getting all the elements, whether it's raining or it's sunny or whatever, like just getting drenched and, you know, is that kind of being in tune with the environment is quite cool too. Yeah.
I've noticed
it is bloody hard, you know. Some days it is just like it's mayhem, you know, and you've got all these things to do and it's all going wrong, and then the food you've given them, she chucks it on the floor, she doesn't want it, and then whatever it is, you know, and it can seem, when you talk about it, really trivial, but when you're actually in it at times, it's like,
do you know what it is? It's and you'll probably appreciate it, especially in lockdown when you couldn't see anybody else, really, it's the relentlessness. Yeah. Like if it was a 5 day a week job, you go, fine, I can put up with this for 5 days.
The weekend, yeah.
I can do 5 days of not sleeping. I can do 5 days of nothing going to plan, and you're about to walk out the door and they've messed all over their outfit and you're changing it and it's now the third outfit change in half an hour. I can do this. But when it's the 10th, 20th day in a row, please just give me a break. That's all it is, isn't it? It's the relentlessness.
It is. And there has been for us absolutely moments, certainly with COVID and not being able to see family, not being able to have any kind of real support from grandparents physically and stuff like that, to take her out for a walk for an hour and you be able to do, it has been just us. Do you know what I mean? But again, there's a lot of gratitude attached to that as well. You know, one of the embarrassing, you're touching on funny.
Oh, go on.
One of the embarrassing things now, films I know and films I know well that you put on in the afternoon and they're just, I don't have time to watch films now.
Yeah,
at all. But I'll still put something on in the background and over in the other room and just kind of have a sense of something. But there's been the odd occasion where I've turned something on and film, like I say, films I know well, and there's been moments in those movies that have touched on any kind of loss or family or being a father or anything, automatically just tears, blubbering and, like, I know this film. I've never reacted like that to this. Like, what is this? Do you know what I mean? And that's been quite an embarrassing thing, I guess, when I think it was something like Jerry Maguire or something like that. And I think it's the moment when Cuba Gooding Jr. gets injured in that American football game.
Yeah.
And he's lying there and Jerry and Tom Cruise is on the side and it's all, you know, all waiting for the moment. And it's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s wife in the movie is saying, Jerry, you've got to make him okay. You've got to, this family doesn't work without him. Even now. And I was just like, I just was crying, you know, because I just felt, and I don't know, I can't really explain it, but having a daughter and having Ella and it being that unit, it just made me go, oh man. And I've seen that film 10, 15, 20 times. And now I, that moment comes, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make a cup of tea or, you know, I'm going to just go and do, because I'm going to be a blubbering mess.
Look, so many dads say that, don't they? That when you become a dad or any parent, things connect on different levels. For me, I really struggle to watch any of like the charity nights and stuff. You know, when you have like children, even though I know I donate, but I'm like, I just, I can't watch it. I don't want to watch it. I can't. because it just resonates, like you say, a lot harder. Jack, are you ready for the last question?
Go for it.
Okay, all right. If you, like in Back to the Future, if you could go back in time to the day before you became a dad, what advice would you give yourself?
It goes back to that thing of that 5% of why didn't anyone tell me?
Yeah.
I would grab myself by the scruff of the neck and I'd pull myself into an alley and I would really just tell it straight how it's going to be. And that it is going to be fine and it is going to be backbreaking and it's going to change your whole world, but it's going to be a great adventure, obviously. But I would, it's just that truth thing. It's just the thing that over the years, I've never really heard anyone really actually say it. It's all very, as I say, it's all very warm. And it's all very, well, good luck. And it's
so
what
would you say to yourself? Go, look, Jack, just so you know.
You're not going to sleep for 8 months.
Okay.
You're not going to sleep for 8 months and it's going to be painful. You're going to feel sick daily. You know, that kind of thing. But it's going to be all right. It's going to be fine. Just work through it. As you said, be present. Just keep being present every time. Yeah.
If anybody's listening to this that is about to have their first child, they're going to go, thanks a lot. Cheers, Jack. That's really perked me up.
This is it. It was this thing. I did an interview not too long ago and this lovely chap, and he said he was due in a few months. And I kind of was like, oh,
you got no idea.
I didn't really say anything because I didn't want to do that thing. Of course I said congratulations. Of course I said that. Yeah. But people have this thing that they can't, how can they say it? I get that. But a part of me really wished someone did. Someone really did say the real sort of gut-wrenching truths of it, you know. I probably would tell myself a bit of that. I would have let myself into a bit of that.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely. Jack, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Thank you so Cheers. Much. Cheers.
So there we go, another episode of Ben Behaving Dadly. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And you do us a favour, could you hit the subscribe button? That would be amazing. And also possibly leave us a review because that really, really makes a difference. And also, I'm getting very professional now. I've got myself an email address for this and all sorts. It's info@benbehavingdadly.com. And here's the plan, right? If you've got a hack or a tip or any advice, email it over and I might throw it on the pod. Or also, if you're struggling with some sort of problem and you want me to put it to a celebrity guest, let me know, info@benbehavingdadly.com. Also, you can find me on all socials @benhanlon. See you next week.